Woof woof.
Here. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prayer Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working, Davi, Lou, and Michael? Can you feel it?
That sure is.
Bad touch. Yep. Bad touch.
Yeah. State. State be gone.
Yeah, and the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org.
Thank you, young Nick. And thank you for speaking up like you're on the radio, son. That was good.
Thanks.
So, I'm crippled now. I am on oxygen like an old lady. Or like, well, I mean, you can kind of be gangster and be on oxygen. Let's see. The guy in Breaking Bad, what's his name? Hector Salamanca. He's on oxygen.
Who now?
Hector Salamanca on Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yep. And let's see. DJ Qualls' character in a really cool show I'm watching, Legit, season 2, just went up on Netflix.
What's that about? I like DJ Qualls.
DJ, you'd love this show. It's a comedy show by Jim Jeffries. It's a comedy show that has a bunch of actual disabled people in it, or differently abled. And DJ Qualls playing a guy who's disabled and has to sleep with an oxygen mask on because he's got muscular dystrophy, I think. So, yep. But I am on an oxygen mask over the past 4 months for some reason. My rock and roll lifestyle caught up with me. Chain smoking cigarettes for 30 some years and chain vaping for about 3 years. Around New Year's, it just started slaying me. And my lung function is like 2/3 what it should be. And my blood oxygen is like 85% of what it should be. So I'm on oxygen. I have a big machine in the other room that's sucking it out of the air and puts it in a long tube, 50-foot tube.
That can't pay for a longer tube.
It's the longer leash, man. I'm on the longer leash in my own home. And then when I leave the house, I have oxygen tanks. They come in a big six-pack, actually. And I went out today with it, and people stared at me like there was something wrong with me, and I went and got a massage, and my massage therapist looked horrified, like, what happened when I walked in? And I took a nap with a tube in my nose, and kind of a drag, man, but it's actually, this is the first day in like 4 months that I don't feel like I'm drowning. It's a good feeling.
And let this be a lesson to you kids, that talk show lifestyle will catch up to you eventually, and you'll wind up on oxygen.
Yep, it will. I have to give my cats away. I've always been allergic to cats, but the allergy has gotten really bad.
That's kind of shocking to me that you're allergic to cats.
I've always been allergic to them. Basically, I've always had cat. I mean, here's what happened, okay? Someone's typing really loud. I used to manage my asthma with that over-the-counter Primatene stuff, which doesn't treat it in any way. It just, like, it's like shooting speed into your lungs. It just makes your tubes in your lungs get big for a few minutes. And it actually like makes your asthma worse over time. But I was like masking the symptoms of, you know, smoker lung and cat lung for like 20 years with that stuff or longer. And they took it off the market a year ago and I had some stockpiled, but it ran out around Christmas time this year. And about New Year's, I started getting sick. You know, here's another thought I have too, is like I have been sick with what I call government flu like twice a year for like 20 years, and I go and get antibiotics and it eventually goes away. I'm thinking that that was actually allergy to cats and it just went away anyway regardless of whether I took the antibiotics or not. You know, I think because the symptoms are kind of similar, because I never had a fever.
Would an allergy to a cat be seasonal, like an allergy to a plant? Do cats have like an annual, I don't know, is there a pheromone you're allergic to or something?
No, but allergies are weird, and they're kind of cumulative, and they're kind of, you know, they don't really go in, like, they're not that predictable. They're very strange. And and you know, the thing that makes the allergy is not the fur, it's the spit. It's the cat's spit, but their fur ends up covered with it because they lick all the time. So if anybody wants to adopt my two wonderful kitties before Monday, and Monday they're going to the pound. Right now they're at the vets being boarded. And I'm going to board them there until Monday. I also have to, so if you want to adopt my kitties and can come to Casper to get them, or we'll put them on a plane if someone pays the ticket. We'll fly them somewhere. It's about
Well, you know, I
bucks.
Would, but as you know, I have a sick cat who has to be solitary.
Yeah, I know. So I have to carry an EpiPen now, too, which is like epinephrine. It's adrenaline. It's so if I have like, because I've been having some asthma attacks that were so bad that like 5 nights ago, I couldn't sleep because when I lie down to sleep, I just start coughing. So I've been sleeping in a chair. It's horrible. It's a lot better on oxygen, but and they still don't know what's wrong with me. Like, I'm getting a lot of tests and x-rays and blood tests, and they're trying to figure out the cause of this, but I think it's just smoking forever. And
you think that you still think this is the vaping?
Yeah, I think it's cumulative vaping and smoking. But, yeah, so I have to carry around an EpiPen, which is like, you know, in Pulp Fiction where they stick the adrenaline in the heart? It's kind of like that. And I don't know. I'm trying to like...
Is
I'm
it a rush?
I've never done it.
Oh, you haven't done it yet. Oh, this is like no. A person who's allergic to bees or something.
Exactly.
And they have
it's
to,
the same thing they
yeah,
carry.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so instead of keeping Narcan over the door jam, you yeah, now carry an EpiPen.
Yeah. It does remind me of that somehow. That's a blast from the past.
That's but, crazy. EpiPen stands for epinephrine. I thought it stood for epidermal.
No, it's epinephrine, which is adrenaline. Yeah, and like I'm trying to not feel disabled and crippled. Like, you know, I had you draw me as Bane so I could feel cool. And, you know, I'm watching like this DJ Qualls show, legit. And, you know, there's like some gangsters in there that are in wheelchairs because they got shot in the neck and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, that's cool. And I'm picturing this like, I know, I'm picturing this like this kind of like super villain hero that like uses 10 EpiPens a day, like coffee, just sticks them in his neck for a coffee rush, like, which would probably kill you. I'm not kids. Don't try this at home. But that's all I got. Go ahead, guys.
Unless you're Bane.
Discuss. Unless you're Bane.
Bane has a, I don't know why he's particularly special, but I think he has both a dependence and a tolerance for whatever toxin they pump into that guy.
Isn't it a painkiller?
Is it a painkiller? I thought it was a steroid.
A Bane killer? Well, I'm on Bane steroids killer. Now, too. Orally inhaled steroids.
There you go.
Are you going to, like, get muscular and everything? Get muscular lungs and nostrils?
Not that kind of steroids.
Almost sounds like the old military atropine injector kits. If you get blasted with mustard gas or some sort of nerve toxin or something like that, there's a two-part injectable thing, and you'll zap yourself with the first one and then the second one. Then you're supposed to put the needles in your pocket and then bend it over so people can see that you injected yourself.
Well, the EpiPen is actually the same technology, physical technology. The guy invented it for that, for the atropine, for like, what is it, nerve gas?
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. And then they were like, hey, we can, he was like, hey, we could use this for bee stings too, and whatever. Allergy.
Yeah, there was a guy that I was stationed with over in Germany, and his nickname was Atropine because he was doing a demonstration on how to do this. This is the NBC nuclear biological and chemical specialist. Well, anyway,
did he shoot himself in the thigh with it in front of the class?
Yes.
Tell me.
This is fun. Oh, God.
What happened? Like, did he just freak out? What did it do to you?
He dropped, flopped, and rolled.
Yeah.
It's kind of like being on fire, except for instead of rolling around like somewhat controlled, he was kind of flopping around. And they had medics come out, take him to the hospital, and he was okay. He just twitched a lot after that.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, yeah. No NBC specialists were permanently harmed in the making of that story.
Yep.
This says the drug that Venom ingests is an experimental super soldier serum called Venom, which is a strength-enhancing super steroid.
That's Bane's drug?
Yeah.
Jim Jesus sent me a link to this thing on Amazon where you can buy a Bane mask. He said I should stick that over my mouth when I go out with the oxygen on. So, like, if people are going to stare at me, they might as well really stare at me.
Yeah.
Well, if you're self-conscious about having the oxygen mask on there, they'll cover it up, and then you can feel better about yourself.
Well, I think it's just weird because people usually don't see me at all. I'm kind of invisible, but, you know, I'm going to make it cool in my head. I mean, Hubert Selby Jr. was on oxygen when I interviewed him, and he's like the toughest mofo I've ever interviewed or met, and he was brilliant. But he also died about 2 months after I interviewed him, so...
Does that mean you're carrying a tank around?
Yes.
Wild.
Yeah, when I'm outside the house...
Is it on a roller or a backpack?
No,
it's
in a shoulder bag. You know, it's probably... it's about a...
Like a 5-pounder, maybe?
Yeah, like 15 inches tall. Like a small fire extinguisher size. Yeah, but when I'm at home, I use... there's a machine that just, like, takes the oxygen out of the air. It's about 2 feet high, foot and a half wide, foot deep. And it's in the other room because it's kind of noisy. I don't know if you might be able to hear it on the recording here, but probably not.
Now, is this expected to be a permanent or long-term or just a short-term thing with you using the oxygen?
I sure hope not. It's to be determined. We don't know yet. I don't know, man.
Wild.
Now,
I like the idea of making some kind of costume out of it. Like, especially, like Bane has these, like, tubes that come out of, like, a backpack and sort of inject into his neck.
Yeah.
Like, even if they were sort of fake, if you could make sort of a housing for the oxygen tube, I think that'd be really neat. It'd be kind of like the Jem'Hadar in Deep Space Nine, too. They were addicted to the white.
I don't know what
there's a lot of drug characters.
Well, there's also the guy with the nitrous oxide mask in Blue Velvet.
Yeah.
Bobby Peru, is that his name?
I'm not sure.
He's creepy. There's all sorts of gases you can pump in your mouth, but I like oxygen. It makes you kind of, hey, my brain's working again. Hasn't been working in a while.
Do you recommend it for recreational use?
Kids, don't try this at home. I know.
You and the hamster.
Maybe when I don't have to have it, I'll pay for it and get it myself.
With Michael Dean and his weird friends.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
Hey, Michael, you know, I've been seeing oxygen bars pop up around San Francisco. You could hang out in one of those.
Everyone wants to be like me. Hey, I wonder if I went into an oxygen bar with my oxygen rig, if they would get mad, like when you bring your own booze into a bar.
Maybe, it's like bringing outside soda into a theater.
Maybe they charge me a corking fee, like, you know, you can bring your own
there you go.
Like, nice wine into a good
for
restaurant.
For tapping your keg, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The joys of being on oxygen.
It is cool. I'm cooler than everybody else who's not on oxygen. So so there was a thing on the Free Talk Live AMP program face beef page today, the private one, of people complaining that Davi's new zombie ad is too loud.
Man, I must have be like the most controversial commercials on LRN. Like, everybody hates my commercials no matter what I do.
Yep. Well, the thing is, your ad's not too loud. Everyone else is too quiet. You made your ad the same volume that the Freedom Fiends are normalized to, like negative 10 dB, which is loud as hell. Which is how
did I do that?
Maybe I did it. I think I did it and sent it to Mark.
Okay.
Yeah. And yep. So they had a big Quorum about it today, and Ian turned it down by 4 decibels. I noticed it today on the radio. It was quieter. So
that's there, okay.
Man. Yeah.
I don't mind.
Yeah.
I mean, it's supposed to be, I mean, it's gunfire and zombies eating people. It's supposed to be kind of loud. It's supposed to get your attention. It's a commercial.
Yep. But, you know.
I finally hear the porcupine realtor and their sort of aping of my old shiny badges commercial.
Explain that.
So, I mean, this is, again, most controversial commercial ever is the shiny badges jingle. I can't even remember it now. I'm not going to sing it because it'll get stuck in everyone's head. But it was a brainworm of a commercial, right? And so people complained about it. And so I made an apology commercial where I played the first few seconds, got it stuck in everyone's head, and then apologized for getting it stuck in their head and offered them a free gift, which about 100 people have taken me up on, which is exciting.
I had something to do with that, too. This was a discussion we had. I'm proud of that. I'll say it.
That jingle is kind of like an MK Ultra experiment.
Yeah.
So now I started getting complaints that commercial went on for too long, and so I came up with a Survivor Max commercial, and either immediately before or immediately after, the porcupine realtor Mark Warden came up with one that starts with his jingle, and then there's a record scratch, and everybody knows this jingle. Let's talk about something else. And I just think it's funny.
And it's an apology, too.
Yeah, it's an apology. Yeah. It's the same thing. Although, you know what they did that I thought was clever was they threw in the URL in the original song at the end. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Freedom Fiends commercial that says, you've read the Constitution well enough to know it's a document to create the federal tyranny we have now. There's still one thing missing. Buttons. That's the takeoff on the old Liberty stickers commercial. Like, you attended lectures, you've gone to indoctrination, and there's still one. You've read the Constitution, like the back of your hand. There's still one thing missing. Stickers.
Yeah, I remember
that off. But that one doesn't play anymore, and mine does, so I win.
Now, the same girl that did your shiny badges jingle, she also does a Porcupine Realtor one.
She does Mark Warden stuff, and she also did Quantum Vibe and some others. I feel a little bad that people are doing like apology tours for Hannah Hoffman songs.
Making fun of, it's because, a new thing. Like, she writes a catchy song, and you play it for a year, and you write an ad apologizing for it. It's the new template.
I would hate the idea that anybody thought that I was not happy with Hannah Hoffman. I'm totally thrilled with the jingle that Hannah Hoffman wrote, and
it does what it should do, which is
it does what it she does it too well. Ruin she does your it brain so well.
Yes, it's meant to take up residence in your brain, stay there, control you, make you do things. Yeah, it worked just fine.
Sure. People should go to Hannah. I think it's hannahhoffman.com, just like it sounds. But if you Google her name, you'll find it. And she has all these other sort of pieces of music that she's done up there, and they're all phenomenal.
Yeah, I've listened to her SoundCloud page, I guess you would call it. And there's a lot of really neat stuff on there. So very talented performer, writer, manipulator, controller type. With her
Rainworm
like
worm farmer,
with her mind control.
Nick's a farmer.
Nick is a farmer.
I am a farmer.
How are the yaks, Nick?
They're doing great. They're still doing their thing. I'm sure they're pregnant by now. I'll have some baby yaks in the 9 months from now. I can't count too far ahead. I don't take high school.
Their gestation period's 9 months. Like human?
Yeah, it's like 9 and a half.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and by then, hopefully, I'll have them tame enough to milk them, and I'll get some yak milk out of them.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom fiends have a deep bench. You know what that means?
No. Please share that with us.
It's a baseball term. Yeah, somebody said it. Tim from Roberts and Roberts said that to me the other day. It was a compliment. It basically means that the reserve players are almost as good as the main players. Like, you know, the fiend founder can barely do shows right now due to some weird illness that's still being diagnosed and treated with oxygen. And but the show goes on, and it's great because we have a deep bench. I like that.
I didn't catch it. What does it mean?
Well, deep bench. Like in baseball, the guys who are on the bench are the guys who aren't playing in the game unless someone gets injured or something, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And deep means you have a lot of people there that are good.
Because there's like a dozen fiends in Michael's back pocket, or in his oxygen bag.
He has a binder full of fiends.
I do.
Yeah, he could just pull out a new one if he needs one, you know, like if he gets sick or something like that. He just call people up and say, hey, I can't do the show. Do the show.
Yep.
And it happens.
I'm just the manager of this band now, and I'll just come down and, you know, sit in on every, like once a week and do some guitar solos. So Lou wanted to talk about, Davi wanted to talk about something. Better Call Saul?
Better Call Saul, yeah. I caught the finale. But the other thing is, I mean, well, how do we want to bury the lead here? Let's see. I went back to episode one, and I've been watching it with my wife so she can get caught up. And the clues of the finale are there all the way back in episode one. Like, it's amazing how... The fiddle showed up. That's true. But I'm talking about Chuck and the sort of the turn with Chuck. Like, the seeds of that were there all along, and I just didn't notice them. I guess Ben did, though.
Yeah. You know, there's a really subtle homage to the movie Repo Man. Not Repo Man, the TV show, but Repo Man, the old weird sci-fi show with, you know that movie? You guys see that?
No.
Huh.
Not familiar.
When they have the montage in this last episode, Marco of Better Call Saul, when they have the scam montage, you know, of all the scams.
Yeah.
They're all like real actual scams. Like, you can look them up. But there's one line. It's a line where Marco is holding some car keys up and says, "Help me get my wife's car out of this bad neighborhood." And I looked that up because I knew I'd heard it before. And it's no scam. Like, that's not a scam. But that line exists in Repo Man. It's what the senior Repo Man says to the punk rock kid to get him to repo his first car.
So weird.
Cute. Yeah. Yeah, I like
Marco. They're all kind of fun. Like, every one of them I, like, parse through in my head. I'm like, how does that scam work? Like, can I figure it out just from what I've been given?
And I was also thinking, like, why would the bar, you know, let those guys operate with impunity in there? And it's like, because it's fun to watch, and because they buy drinks for everybody, and because,
you know,
they probably,
I was thinking,
like,
about
the out-of-towners
this too.
That go through there.
It is they say that they're targeting out of towners, but the other thing is they're kind of targeting jerks. Like, I feel like some of these things are victimless crimes because they require the mark.
They require ego
to.
Like,
it's
ego
and greed, or theft, or whatever. But it also always requires the mark to kind of violate the non-aggression principle, right? Like, the mark has to be willing to steal from the drunk to get played.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
You know, I looked up the Kennedy half dollar scam, and it's like all Kennedy half dollars have him facing to the left.
Oh yeah, it's just fake.
Yeah,
they use the Kennedy because most people are not familiar with the Kennedy, right? Like, you'd use a $2 bill or a Sacagawea or something now.
Yeah.
Or I guess you'd still use a Kennedy because even less people are familiar with it now.
You know what? You know what else is? You know what else is prefaced in one of the previous episodes that's shown in this one is at some point Saul is talking about how good he is at like using his words to convince others and even himself to get things done. And at some point he says, I slept with a beautiful woman one time who thought I was Kevin Costner. She did it because I believed it.
Wasn't that from Breaking Bad? Was that a Breaking Bad callback or did that happen in this series?
I don't know.
I think that was in Breaking Bad. But yeah, this was that payoff.
Do I need to start watching Breaking Bad so I can catch up on Better Call Saul?
I'm testing that too because my wife did not watch Breaking Bad, so she's watching Better Call Saul from episode one with no idea who Tuco is or no idea who Mike is or any of these things. So, and she picks up on the same jokes but differently. It's cool.
Saul has a deep bench.
He does.
Yeah, Marco, the fat guy, the co-scammer, his name's Marco. The episode's called Marco. What you kind of learn in this episode too is like Marco kind of taught Saul everything he knows and kind of made him who he is. He's kind of Saul's mentor. He's Saul's mentor.
How is it? I thought Saul was Marco's mentor.
You slipping Jimmy because he was slipping Jimmy before.
Yeah, because remember he says, I just like to watch you work.
Who said that?
Marco says that to Jimmy.
Oh, I don't know. It kind of seemed like a mentor relationship to me. Maybe.
Like it might be. So the part of the issue
is... They co-sponsored each other.
Jimmy is definitely the front man in the duo, right? And Marco sort of looks like a Mark anyway. And so the fact that he looks like he's getting duped, like especially in the Kennedy scam, is why it works, right? Because the Mark sort of thinks that he's got one up on the other guy.
I really love this story of the Kennedy scam. Like, there was this one guy, this one rogue at the Denver Mint.
Yeah, right.
That's a great story, man. I think they made that up. I think everything else is a real scam, but I think they wrote that scam. I couldn't find it anywhere online.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's sort of like there's probably a hero's journey in the conventional scam. You could probably work it out if you tried.
The scammer's journey,
the anti-hero's journey, the Mark's journey. That's what it is.
The scumbag's journey.
There's a formula, right, to these sorts of scams, and it's about convincing the inside man that something is valuable so that the Mark comes along with him, right?
You didn't know what the hero's journey was until I told you about it. Now you're living
it. No, sure I did. No, yeah, I did. Yeah, because we studied it in school.
Oh, no, I totally did.
We spent a whole week watching Star Wars movies. I remember that in school.
Yeah, which are basically Westerns in space.
Yeah, Westerns in space, right.
Kind of like how Fast and Furious is D&D with cars.
That made those movies tolerable for me. Knowing that make them make sense. And this new one, Furious 7, there's even a dragon. Like once you put on the like D&D goggles, it's like, oh, that's mithril armor. Oh, that's a dragon. Oh, that's a steed. it all fits now. It's like watching it's watching Tolkien fan fiction for me.
Yeah. So let's see, what else about Better Call Saul?
Well, I want to know what happens with Kim. I feel like he's spoiled it with Kim now because if he goes bad, if he breaks bad, then I mean that's the only reason Kim likes him.
Well, I also want to know if he actually gets this job at the other firm in Santa Fe and blows it or if he never gets it.
No, he blew it off. He didn't go to the meeting.
Oh, he didn't go. That's right. Yeah.
That was the point. Like he became
Saul. He drove back, he talked to Mike and he left. He left the parking lot pretty much as Saul.
But here's the thing, and this they didn't do this outright, but I think that this is very deliberate. So one of the things we learned in this finale is that the howling is part of the scam, right? The howling that they do outside the bar is Saul's way of telling Marco that they're on their way, right? But if you remember when this scam was in like episode 2 or 3, and the guy says, hey, what was your name? He says, Saul Goodman, right?
Yeah.
So now, so that's the name of the guy who does this scam. The Rolex watch scam is Howling Saul Goodman, right? So when he drives away, he doesn't say it, now I'm Saul Goodman, but he drives away sort of humming Smoke on the Water and wearing the pinky ring. So it's like he's embraced that character.
Okay, this is why I think that Marco is the mentor, because he gives him a talisman, you know, the pinky ring that he gets from him.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And sure. And because he, in singing Smoke on the Water, he's kind of carrying on the mentor after the mentor is dead.
Okay, then yes. And because talking about fulfilling the role.
And because in the hero's journey, the mentor very often dies with the mentee, you know, with his arms around him, watching him die, and, like, get some last piece of knowledge on the deathbed. And the last piece of knowledge there is Marco saying, like, this is the best week of my life. Like, Jimmy's like, yeah, there's something to all this, you know? Because remember, like, that when Marco died, I think that's... Is that pretty close to... It's close to now time in the story, right? It's not flashback.
It is now time. He went back to Cicero. So that is not a flashback. That's now time. Because remember, he said he'd been gone for 10 years. And he was upset that he didn't come back for his funeral.
When Saul's melting down in the elder care home.
The bees.
And he says, like, and this guy's connected. And I mean, like, Cicero connected. And I'm like, what does that mean? Because there is a town, Cicero, you know, outside of Chicago.
That felt like he was referring to, like, some ancient Greek Cicero thing I wasn't familiar with.
No, there's some gangster in some show whose last name is Cicero.
Oh.
It's, okay. What's it in? It's in, Well, Al Capone's gang was from Cicero, I think, but...
Well, he's from Cicero. That's what made that so strange. Like, well-connected in Cicero, like Cicero connect. That would be like if Cicero I said, yeah, connected. I got lots of... I'm well-connected. I'm San Francisco connected. Like, that doesn't mean anything. So from a literary perspective, I think you're right. Marco fulfills the role of mentor. But as far as their actual relationship in the plot, I think that Marco looked up to Saul more.
Huh.
Which is cool. I like fake reverses.
Yeah.
It also redeemed Hamlet.
In Goodfellas, there's a character named Paul Cicero, who's played by Paul Savino.
Okay.
Who's, if you saw him, you'd be like, yeah, I know that guy. He plays a gangster in everything he's in.
Or a cop on the original Law and Order.
Did he?
I'm pretty sure he was.
Oh, he did. Do you know that from memory?
Yes.
You actually know who Paul Savino is.
Well, I certainly didn't have time to type it in, unless I typed harder.
Yeah, I mean, he's a, you know, fat, tough, 50-year-old guy in a suit, Italian-American from Brooklyn. He looks like a gangster. Yeah.
I'm so stoked about this show. I can't wait for it to come back now.
You know, it's weird. I didn't know that this was the end of the season, and they were really anticlimactic. Like, they didn't really pimp it much at all. And it didn't seem like one, but it did resolve. Like, I liked how they didn't overextend it like shows often do for, you know, season ending.
Yeah, it was just the completion of an arc.
Yep.
It wasn't like, you know, for me, anytime anybody says finale, I'm always reminded.
We're out.
Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live and worldwide from all over the place. And we got Davi in San Francisco. I am in Squirrel Attack, Wisconsin, doing a remote broadcast, siphoning off the Wi-Fi of a McDonald's parking lot. Nick is in Oregon at Yak Attack, and Michael is in Beast Lake. So, yeah, we're everywhere.
Yeah.
So... But anyway, I'm really excited about something.
Something happened yesterday that makes me believe that the future is going to be very, very bright, prosperous, and fulfilling. There was an announcement made yesterday, and as soon as I heard that announcement, I just knew that things are going to be so much better. Anybody have any idea what it is?
Nope.
No.
Anyone? Anyone?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Okay. Well,
printable oxygen tanks.
No, that was
oxygen.
Yeah, that was actually this morning. If you check the timestamp on that report, it was technically today. No, the big announcement that was made yesterday was a store here in my area has reduced its Easter candy prices even more than they were before. So now it's like they're almost paying you to take this Easter candy. Now, some of the mini statists out there might have thought that I was talking about Name Redacted announcing his candidacy to become the central planner, but nope.
Is that Rand Paul?
Yeah, that's not going to turn out.
Speaking of people whose names cannot be said, Chris Cantwell was talking today on Free Talk Live about how he might move to Anarchapuco. And I promptly tweeted, what did I tweet? I tweeted Indiegogo to send Chris Cantwell to Mexico. He should do that because he'd probably get like some of his friends and fans would contribute, but probably like Stop Free Keen and people who hate him might throw some money in there too.
Well, hey, if you're going to move down south of the border and you could get our people to pay for it, why not?
Yeah. He said he didn't like American women. That's why he's moving.
Yeah. I imagine the winters are a little bit more tolerable.
Yeah, well, he also said he just survived the worst New Hampshire winter, one of the worst ones in history or on record.
Is that true?
So I don't know. Actually, Wyoming's had a pretty mild one. Hasn't been that bad here.
Well, I just recently saw the first robin of spring. It was shivering. It had frozen snot coming out of its nose, like hanging like an icicle.
Was it in a bird's mouth? A cat's mouth?
No. The cats are smart enough to stay inside right now. Yeah, it's been a very interesting winter up here. It actually calmed down like a couple days after I got up here, and for the most part, it's been pretty mild, unusually mild from what I understand. But we've had a couple days where we got pretty heavy snow, like this week, Monday morning. I think I woke up to about 3 inches of snow on the ground, and then this morning was freezing rain, that's always a treat. So anyway, yeah, fun with weather.
There you go.
Nice.
So Nick,
we've had interesting weather here. It was a nice mild summer. It's great for the trees. Oregon, especially Western Oregon's, we have a lot of logging going on here, and we got some ice storm a while back that totally blew off the tops of trees. When trees get real cold, they expand and it shatters, blows off the tops of the trees, it'll kill them. But I'm hoping that it kind of made up this really nice early spring. We've had spring since like February. There have been birds out, and it's been beautiful for a long time. And nice. That helps because we're gonna beat our California's drought. I think we're gonna have bad summer being dry, but it's good for the cattle and yak industry here that California's drying up.
It's protectionism. It's weather mercantilism. Yeah. Hey, how can California, being next to the largest body of water in the world, be running out of water and having a drought?
Government. If you drive along, I think it's Highway 5, there are signs every mile or so that say Congress created Dust Bowl, and they're protesting something or other.
And we'll be back with the second hour of the Freedom Fiends coming up right after this.
We just have to get the right dust bowls in there and things will work out.
Wings! We'll be right back.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. You can learn more about this at BIPCOT.org.
Excellent. So, have you guys seen the video, George Ought to Help?
I have.
Yeah.
Okay. Nick, tell us a little bit about it. Give us a little play-by-play, brief synopsis. And anybody that's interested in this, you can go to YouTube and type in George Ought to Help, and it should be the only thing that pops up. But anyway, go ahead, Nick.
Well, I believe it was a cartoon showing, I think George was somebody who needed help. Is that right?
No, Oscar needs help.
Okay, George was the guy who wouldn't help Oscar, right?
Probably because he knows Oscar better than we do.
And that is true. But anyway, go ahead. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Oscar needed some help, and he asked two of his buddies, George and I don't remember the other guy's name, and the other guy decided to help him out, pay his kids' tuition to college.
What a schmuck. Sorry.
But George would not pay, and so this blue cloud with a British accent took us on a little adventure and exploring whether we should use force to make George pay for Oscar's kids' tuitions.
Yeah, it is very libertarian 101, as in, are you justified in using the government gun to make things happen just because you think that they are important? And I say no. Would anybody like to play devil's advocate and support the use of violence, even if you're just, you know, like lying through your teeth and making it up as you go along?
Okay, I can do that.
Okay, have at it, Dobby.
What am I arguing for? I'm arguing that George should...
Yeah. Yeah, argue for pointing guns at George to make him help other people out.
Well, that's the democratic thing to do, but I'm actually going to support the Marxist position, and that is that it isn't enough that George pay for Oscar's tuition. In reality, all of the professors should be giving Oscar his education for free.
Oh, yes. They should definitely be working for free and then going out and getting a side job for free to pay all their bills.
Because education is a human right.
Yes, it is, absolutely.
So depriving Oscar of an education by, you know, charging tuition is a crime against humanity. Because how can people vote if they're not educated? See, that's the thing. We have to get more uneducated people to vote for education so that they're qualified to vote.
Oh, this is killing me. And strangely enough, I really think that you hit the mark on that, Dobby.
I hit the marks. I hit the marks on the head. That's what.
Yeah, you hit the Karl Marx right on the head with that one. Oh my God. Yeah, I mean, it's. There are people out there that say, "Well, we have to help her. Somebody has to do something," and
government.
I guess the big question that I have when it comes to helping other people out is define something or define help.
Yeah.
And
you hit on something very important, and a lot of people won't really catch on to it, is, you know, well, maybe he knows Oscar, and that's why he won't help. People have this idea of, you know, the poor person who is downtrodden, and they're simply down on their luck because of no fault of their own, and it's just a cruel world or accidental or something like that. And in some cases, you know, it is a misfortune that happens, and it's bad luck. But I hate to sound really cold here, but a lot of people are in their situations that they're in specifically because of what they've done to get there. Now, it may not have been intentional. I don't think people set out to be dirt poor or destitute or homeless or things like that. But when you look at their actions, you look at it, and the only it's the only possible outcome that could come out of it.
Well, you know, I read somewhere that intelligence is the art of distinction making. And that's the thing about politics, is distinctions are not made in most of these things. So a person either believes that all poor people are poor of their own fault and they should raise themselves up by their bootstraps and they're all part of this poor class that is there of their own decisions, or they believe that all poor people are this sort of like virtuous sort of victim of the capitalist system and they should be whatever, given everything for free. And the thing is it's, there's a distinction to be made here. There are people in both of those descriptions, and there are people who are poor for other reason. It's not like everybody who is below some, you know, dotted line on an economic graph are all the same way for the same reason. Policies that draw these arbitrary lines through the middle of groups of people who are distinct and different, individual and diverse. So I would rather that the money being given to somebody who was down on their luck was coming from someone who knew them, because they're the ones most qualified to know what help they need and whether or not they deserve help at all.
Okay, and that makes a lot of sense. When it comes to helping people, I think a view of a lot of the unthinking public out there is, well, just throw money at them.
Yeah,
and when I look at poor people, I think, okay, what can I do to actually improve their situation? I've mentioned this on the show in passing a while back. I was homeless for a while, and I wasn't living the rock and roll lifestyle like Michael was, you know, back when he was in bomb and everything else. I got there through some bad decision-making, some bad breaks. The economic situation played a small part in it, but a lot of it was because of me and my actions, and lack of actions in many cases. As an example, a friend of mine set me up with a job. All I had to do was fill out an application and fax it in, and I dawdled on it, and a month later I said, hey, you know, I just faxed in that application, you know, what's going on with it? And I literally, all I had to do was fax in that application and not die during an interview, and I would have had that position.
Right.
But
you know, I spent some time homeless, and it wasn't through any fault of my own, but it was because I chose to be homeless. It was something that I wanted to experience firsthand for the purpose of sort of developing empathy. And it would have been utterly unconscionable for me to accept welfare as a voluntarily homeless, voluntarily poor person.
Yeah.
Because I was there of my own doing. It wasn't because of something I did wrong, but it was that it would have been a kind of fraud for me to like pretend like I was down on my luck, so give me free lunch, you know.
And that is the attitude of a lot of people in the homeless shelters and in other situations. Have you guys seen the video of that woman with, I don't know, 14 kids or something like that, and she's talking about how somebody has to pay for her children?
No,
and I have not seen that video.
Okay, yeah, it was good. She expects, you know, the taxpayer to cut a check for, well, the taxpayer to get extorted by government, and for government to cut a check to cover, you know, food, clothing, and everything under the sun with this woman. And I when you have 14 kids and multiple dads and none of the dads are in the picture, I'm sorry, I'm not really sympathetic to you. I mean,
there are other systemic problems. It's like before you can rebuild the dam, you have to stop the flow of tragedy, right?
If the flow of tragedy comes out of your body parts, she
has other systemic things going on in her life that money won't solve.
Yeah, stop the flow of children. But I mean, when I think about helping somebody, and I go back to my particular situation, and I look and I talk about the folks that were in the shelter. When it comes to helping them, I see showing them how to find a job, and not just obtain a job, but also to maintain that job as helping. And you can't just hand somebody money and they all of a sudden know how to do a job. So I volunteer in my spare time working with homeless people, and I will show people how to do resumes. I will do mock interviews with them, things like that, because, you know, number of years back, I worked in management. I've done hiring and interviewing and things like that, and also firing. So that is something that I will do. Or, you know, if I see somebody is freezing their butt off and it's a really cold day out and they look like they could use a cup of coffee, I'll buy them a cup of coffee because that's something immediate. And it's only going to take care of them for a little while, but it is going to assist. Now, I'm not just going to hand somebody $20 and say, here, get a cup of coffee every hour on the hour.
You know, the other sort of hubris of the Oscar and George situation is to assume that the best possible path for Oscar's children is college tuition. Like, there are lots of people who have done much more productive things with their life by not going to college. It's sort of it's a vicious assumption to think that that's right. That's the right path for everyone.
I saw a cartoon the other day, and it was a guy in some menial job that he hated, and he says, man, I hate this job. I wish I would have gone to college, and out of nowhere pops this fairy godfather, godmother, whatever it is, and it says, okay, you want to see what it would look like had you gone to college? Okay, poof, and it shows the same picture as before, and he says, nothing changed, and the fairy's like, yeah, right. Because that person would have been in the same job. I mean, the only thing that they left out was the guy holding a massive student loan debt notification. Right. So, yeah, college, you know, it's not necessarily the best course of action.
Worms.
Yeah. More Freedom Fiends, oxygenation from indoctrination when we come back right after this.
Worms.
Worms.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And we are talking about what is help and how can a person help somebody else in need? And how can we do it without government taking our money and redistributing it and creating a big giant welfare state, a dependent class, and a voting bloc? Nick, what are your thoughts on the subject?
Well, kind of following the line about education and going to college, is that really helping a kid get a true education, sending them to a school, and it being compulsory education before college and high school and elementary school? Does that really help? And I wouldn't say it does all the time. I think that if you really want to help a kid, you got to find out what their goals are. And if you want to become an engineer, doctor, or lawyer, you're going to have to go to college. Either way, you're going to rack up debt. And I would blame that on the government because they're trying to help students by lessening the cost for this students through whatever programs to make college tuition cheaper for some people. And it doesn't really work out that way because when some people can get it for free, it raises up the prices for the tuitions because the universities know they can get more money from the government than they could have through somebody who actually has to put their own money into it based on
right. It eliminates system. The downward market pressure on the price when the money to pay for something is free.
Absolutely.
Yes, and if you look at just about anything that is subsidized, and that government is heavily involved in with research and development or anything of that kind, you will see that the prices on those things go absolutely sky high. So, yeah, it's not like subsidizing anything is making it any cheaper, and there is going to be a cost no matter what, whether you pay it at the point of service or if you have it taken out of your paycheck or if it's tacked onto the price of something else through like a tariff or excise tax. I mean, the cost is always there. It doesn't go away. I understand that in the last State of the Union address, President Obama said that he has ordered the Department of Agriculture and the Forest Service to plant the magic trees that all this free stuff grows on. But it's going to be a few years before those things start budding. So, Nick, with you, and one of the things that you're known for is the self-education because you were contemplating dropping out of school. You saw it as a waste of time. How has your self-education been going? Because I mean, that's primarily what you do is independent study, right?
No, I'm still in school. I'm still enrolled in the high school. I'm slowly trying to get my way out. I'm hoping that I'll either just be taking a math class next year, or I'll be completely out of school and I'll drop out. I do try to do my own self-directed learning. I don't do like a curriculum. All of my education on my own really comes from podcasts and doing research for my own podcast. So I listen to quite a bit of media during the day when I'm not at school. It will range from something about farming to deep philosophy, politics, you know, finance, whatever. I think that's been my major tool has been spoken audio.
Okay, yeah, and I'm going to kind of travel off the subject for a second. I want to give a shout out to the Dangerous History Podcast. You can find that at profcj.org or just do a Google search for Dangerous History Podcast. He has a recent episode. It's called Save Yourself. And it's historical examples of people choosing to take control of their own destiny and save themselves from certain death or continued slavery or things like that. And I currently work in mental health, and I had the opportunity to share a couple of these stories with a patient recently, and I think it really made a good solid impact. And the examples, two of the examples were Frederick Douglass, who was an escaped slave. He escaped from slavery 20-some years before the 13th Amendment was ratified and slavery was abolished. And one of his quotes was, "I prayed for 20 years and nothing happened until I prayed with my own legs." And he got up and he escaped slavery because he couldn't wait for somebody else to come do it. And then recognize
the origin of the vote with your legs.
Yeah.
Because voting's a kind of prayer.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. More Freedom That's Fiends awesome. And less slavery right after this.
Worms.
Worms! Say worms, Nick.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
For some some reason in this country and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Yo,
yo,
Freedom Fiends.
This is Michael Dean, the octogenarian, the senile delinquent. And I got a quick announcement. Got some cats I need to find homes for. I am suddenly allergic to them. And I have two cats, Peanut and Charlie, I want to find homes for. They are being boarded at the vets right now. And Monday, they're going to the pound. I don't want them to go to the pound, but if anyone wants to take them, you can drive to Casper and get them. If they give them a good home, or if they live further away and can pay for a plane ticket, we'll put them on a plane. But that's all. Have a good show, guys. Worms.
Worms. All right. Thank you, Michael. Now, if my landlord let me have cats, I'd take them. But I'm kind of far away, so Michael would have to put them in a box and mail them to me, and we could play Schrodinger's cat when they get here. I know that was a bad taste. Very bad taste. But anyway, so yeah, going back to talking about helping people out, there's a fine line on helping people and also creating dependency. And a lot of people say that government intentionally makes people dependent with food stamps, just like feeding the bears at the park or something like that. From what I've seen, my observations of working in this field and then also being on the other side of the desk, if you will, I've seen that a lot of people, when they're not fending for themselves, they do become dependent, and they have an expectation that they are going to be taken care of, and that creates, after a long-term period of time, it creates a learned helplessness to where people actually do forget to how to fend for themselves. And just the basic things that go along with, you know, being a grown-up and on your own. So what say you guys?
Well, that's kind of interesting. I kind of think about what I'll be doing as soon as I'm financially independent and how dependent I am on my parents. And I don't think there's anything wrong with being being dependent on somebody, but it's always good to find a way to get out. And I think that a lot of people do need help because it can be difficult to try and keep track of all that stuff. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a government having, you know, somebody help you out how to figure, get your things in straight, you know, your life straight. And it's always great to have somebody there to say, hey, you know, I'll help. And I think that some of the best help, I think we talked about this a little bit, is coming from people that we know best. And it's great to have a community of people out there doing stuff and not relying on the government to try and, you know, help the homeless situation or whatever. And getting out there and trying to help yourself is a really noble deed, and it's great for a community.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the local food bank, and we have one here in my new town, and I'll probably get involved with them. I mean, at the very least, I'll take down some donations here and there. And I understand there's going to be a time where somebody's house gets burned down or they get laid off, and you know, maybe they don't have a whole lot in savings, because it is difficult to save extra money these days. And I understand that these things happen. But when you're talking about somebody who is
lifelong on food stamps. They grew up with food stamps. Going back to your example, if you know, as a kid growing up, and you're now 16, your job is to learn how to become independent. I wouldn't expect a 10, 12, or even a 16-year-old to be completely independent and take care of themselves and not rely on their parents in any way, shape, or form. I mean, that's the whole purpose of parents, is they're supposed to get you ready to go out there into the real world and, you know, be able to take care of yourself. But when you're talking about a situation where people do not evolve in that fashion and they just stay dependent, and instead of being dependent upon their parents, they're dependent upon the system, or they've always been dependent upon the system, and they don't learn how to take care of themselves. So, I mean, is that making sense?
Yeah, I think that makes sense. There does need to be... I think that there needs to be people that do show people, you know, how to be mature, like, in that way. And it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody who's coercing money out of somebody to get paid to do it. I think that there are ways to try and help those people. And it's, sometimes it doesn't work. There's no 100% way that works 100% of the time. But no, yeah, I think that that's a big issue when people are taught that they can be dependent, because but partly it's not great for them because they don't have true freedom. They're not able to really take responsibility for their life, and they don't have complete control over that, and that's a real shame, I think.
Yeah, from what I've seen up here, this area, you know, northern Michigan itself, the Upper Peninsula, it is more of a tight-knit community. It's a lot of small towns. Like, I mean, the town that I live in is about 2,000 people, something like that. And most of the towns around here are in that range. The big town in the area is about 7,600 people. So it's roughly one-fifth the number of people in Beast Lick, Wyoming, where Michael lives. So, but yeah, people have a tendency to help each other out a lot more up here. And with things like the food bank, donating stuff to a thrift shop, I personally see that as the best way. Because when you're talking about going through the system, you have a lot of paperwork that goes along with it, and it's brutally inefficient. It is much more efficient for me to go to Walmart, buy a 10-pound bag of rice and some canned goods, and take it on down to the food bank. I mean, that takes about an hour, if that. So
yeah, instead of some bureaucracy that's, you know, takes years to set up and is stuck there with continuous funding forever because we can't take away people's jobs.
Yeah. Now, Dobby, one of the things that you've done in the past is you've done Hoodie the Homeless. Tell us a little bit about that and how it's worked and.
Well, sure. One of the things you said something that sort of struck a chord for me that I want to touch on briefly, and that is you said that, it's really just the concept. It's interesting to me that everyone is born dependent on parents, but for some reason, historically throughout, you know, humanity would not have survived if it was the case that dependence bred ongoing dependence. Like, for some reason, that dependence produces independence, and I'm not totally sure why that is. I'm sorry to change the subject, but this is a new thought for me, so I want to explore it. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's really interesting. It feels like there's sort of maybe a key to the problem there, is figuring out what kind of dependence actually breeds independence rather than ongoing dependence. Like, what is it that's unique about parenting that does that?
Well, I see it as the learning experience. And as an example, we were talking about education earlier, and you talk about medical school. You go through however many years of medical school there is, and at the end of that time, you actually leave the school and you go to a hospital and do your internship and residency and
all the stuff that goes along with it. So it's a process. But if you're not learning independence during your dependence, or if you're not learning medicine while you're in medicine school, you're not gonna leave the nest. In either case, it's going to be failure to launch. That was the name of a movie that describes somebody who did not, leave the nest.
Okay.
And I think what happens is the state comes in and takes over as the parent when somebody turns 18. And, of course, you know, statists are going to love that because that's relevance for them. That's job security. Now, nobody would demand police if they didn't think that they were going to be robbed, raped, or murdered.
I wonder if it's because the child dependent on the parent is dependent on a parent who is spending their own resources. And in that sense, the parent has an interest in weaning the child, whereas the state has people dependent on it, and it's not their own resources. So their incentive is actually to increase dependence.
I think you pretty much nailed it.
Yeah. Yep. So how do we wean people?
so long as there's a welfare state, and you're going to have this dependency system, this government as the new parents, I don't think it's going to happen. I think that system's going to have to get so big that it collapses. And rather than, you know, it sounds like I just invoked Cloward and Piven, and most people, as soon as you invoke Cloward and Piven, they hear dun 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 dun, and that means the transformation to full communism. No. I mean, if people say, you know what, we tried the welfare system, it doesn't work, we're not participating in it, there's, you know, 300 and some million of us, and there's like, you know, just a couple million armed goons and bureaucrats, what are you going to do about it? You know, I think a situation like that would be a higher likelihood. I don't think the average person is going to, or at least I hope that the average person is not going to say, hey, the problem was we just didn't have enough socialism. Let's go full socialism.
Yeah. You know, one of the most powerful things I think a person can do to help is to hire someone rather than to just give them things. But that's a crime in a lot of cases.
Yeah. Thank you, government.
So I wonder if a sort of culture of to bolster the culture of under the table jobs would be a sort of net benefit to poverty and unemployment and everything in general, you know?
Oh, definitely. I mean, most likely those positions would not be high-paying jobs, but also they wouldn't have taxes taken out. So it's kind of a wash.
Well, it's definitely it's not a wash in the sense that it's an upwardly mobile position, but it might be that it's like, you know, they say that the minimum wage is to take the bottom rungs out of the ladder, right? So. What if there was like a black market trampoline at the bottom of that? You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, what if it was, I mean, that's really what a person needs, is the ability to go from poverty or go from unemployment or homelessness to that bottom rung. And so if the black market has to be the one to do it, why not?
That is a brilliant idea. Worms.
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 You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends. And we are wrapping up with the final segment here. Davi came up with a solution in the break. Tell us about how to trampoline people to the new bottom rung of the ladder.
I don't know that I necessarily just came up with this. This is something I've been thinking for a long time. But I think it might be worth doing instead of talking about. And I think maybe that's what I did during the break.
Okay.
So I get in these arguments, or, you know, whenever minimum wage comes up, I like to personalize it because I like to personalize issues, right? And for me, one of the issues with minimum wage is that for as long as I've been doing promotion, there has always been an unfulfilled position of somebody who can hand out flyers for me, right? Which is like it's easier than a paper boy, right? Like stand on a corner and hand this to people as they walk by. And I've had to do it myself, and I do it myself, and I enjoy doing it. It's not that I don't enjoy doing it. Like I've even, like, people joke that I was called the pamphleteer for a long time. And I still do this at zombie conventions, right? Like I have a flyer and I walk up and down the line as people are waiting to get in. But that is a real position that a person could do and do for money. And my time is worth enough to pay someone to do it, but I can't afford minimum wage, right? So that job is destroyed because I can't afford to hire someone would be a crime, right?
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, I ought to just do it anyway.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not a factory owner. I'm not Coke. You know, I'm not, you know, it would be an under the table job anyway. So why not actually do that? Like, why not? And I do this to some extent at Porkfest. Rebecca is the Shiny Badges sales manager, and she's been making 20% off everything she sells at conferences for a few years now. And
that's the girl at Porkfest, right?
Yeah. So this is a really great.
She's example. A hustler.
She's like 15 now, I think, and she's been doing this for 2 or 3 years, and it used to be she just went around and sold things, but then she started sharing her cut with other kids and amassing a little sales team, and this year she's actually consulting with me about which products we're gonna invest in, right? Because she has a sense of what she can sell and what the demand is for things that are needed at Porkfest. So we like did a brainstorming session of what sort of products that she thinks I need to invest in, right? So I'm actually like investing in her expertise now. It's not an entry-level position anymore. Like, it's not like any kid could do what she does. So obviously there's been an education here, you know? So yeah. I could do this at any conference. What I could do at any convention or any conference is approach someone who was panhandling or something and say, hey, you want a job for a couple hours? You know?
Yeah, that would make perfect sense. And I mean, all the child labor at Porkfest, I just found it exhilarating. There was a young gal who had taken the sidewalk chalk and had put down, you know, babysitting, dog walking services, go to site number, whatever, or call this cell phone number. And you could literally walk through the park, get names and numbers of people to hire to watch your kids or walk your dog, and it's just really amazing. And these kids are learning the skills to run a business like you're talking about with Rebecca, and they're making some money at these things. And if they follow the law, none of this would happen.
You use the term child labor, and many people like think immediately that that's exploitative, right? But I swear, if you look at the math and you look at what it costs me to travel, what it costs me to purchase the merchandise, what it costs me to get the vending table, all of that, and then you say that Rebecca gets 20% as a sales commission off of anything that she sells, at a lot of these events, she walks away with more net profit than I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what real help is. I think that it's great for people to provide kids an opportunity to do something like that, because I would jump on that if I were in that position. And I would love to do that. Being young and able to make money is awesome. I think that's one of the things I try to push on my show is for young people to get out and do stuff and make money.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I used to rake leaves, cut grass, shovel snow. I passed out flyers. And I mean, being a kid was about being a hustler. It was about making some money when you could.
And the other thing?
Yeah.
If Rebecca ever decides she wants to go and get a job somewhere, she has a blaring letter of recommendation from me immediately right off the bat. Like, no college degree required. Like, I will write a 10-page essay to an employer that's interested in hiring her.
And strangely enough, according to the law, you have exploited her, and everything that she did was wrong.
It was a crime.
Here, have some government. Great show, guys. It's always a blast to talk to you, Davi and Nick. Hope to do it again soon.